It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Jury duty is a civic responsibility many people hope they'll never have to endure. While many are summoned, few serve. Joining me now in Studio A for a look at the history of juries and how they are selected is University of Pittsburgh law professor David Harris. David Harris, welcome back to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hiya, Paul. Good to be with you.
We'd like to hear how you feel about jury duty. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email address ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Have you ever served on a jury? If so, what was your experience like? Have you ever been dismissed from jury duty? If so, how did that make you feel? 412-246-2002 is our number. And at this point, we'd like to make it very clear that while it may be an immediate thought when receiving a summons for jury duty, David is not here to tell you how to get out of jury duty, as was mentioned in our promo. That was meant as a humorous aside. The responsibility of serving on a jury, of course, is something we, along with David, take very seriously. So, David, what are the historical roots of juries and jury service, and where did this whole concept come from?
Well, like most of the other aspects of our legal system, Paul, we got to go back to England in the pre-colonial days. This developed in the Middle Ages. Juries had different duties at different points. Sometimes they were almost investigative bodies. But from about the middle of the 16th century forward, we began to see juries as decision makers, people who would find the facts. And by the time we get into the to the 18th century, pre-American colonial history, what we find are juries selected from the population of property owners generally, free people generally, white men generally, and the juries are deciding guilt or innocence. And in those days, one of the great functions of the jury was to stand between the citizen and the great power of the government or the crown. And in the colonial era, what we found was colonists refusing to convict people in the colonies for violating British laws that were really, really unpopular. So you had the case of John Peter Zenger, the journalist, who was sued for libel, put up on trial for libel by the British governor in this colony, and the jury refusing to convict. So by the time we get to the era of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, the right to a jury trial in a criminal matter is enshrined in the Sixth Amendment. It was considered that important, and it stays with us even today.
So explain the philosophy behind the term a jury of one's peers and why the term is a misnomer.
Yeah, most people think you're entitled to a jury of your peers. That is the old phrase. It's really not quite that way. What you're entitled to is a jury drawn from a cross-section of your community. In other words, it doesn't have to be people just like you, people of the same station or things like that. It is a jury drawn correctly from all across the community in which you live and work and so forth. That is what gives you fairness. The idea of it being your peers is really not accurate.
412-246-2002, if you'd like to join the conversation and share your stories about your experiences on a jury or if you've been dismissed from jury duty. John in Pittsburgh is on the line. John, welcome to the show. You're on with David Harris.
Thanks, Paul. I've been called for jury duty three times, and every single time, once in another state and twice in Allegheny County, was told that I cannot serve on the jury because my father is a judge, and the attorneys through the voir dire process, I always go up. They ask me a few questions. That question comes up, and then I get told I'm not going to be selected. It's becoming quite a hassle. It's turning me away from wanting to serve on a jury or answer the jury duty calls because I spent a half day taking a day off work to always be told that I'm not going to serve on the jury. I didn't know how commonplace that was.
And is that something you want to do, John?
I mean, I'd be more than happy to serve on the jury. I mean, I understand they're not looking for leaders and that kind of stuff, but I think that my over-eagerness sometimes may also draw me from not being selected for jury duty.
Well, that's really interesting, John. It used to be in the past that most jurisdictions had automatic exclusion by category, by certain professions or maybe even age. That is no longer the case. There's no profession such as lawyer who's always excused, or clergy person. And so what's happening with you is that you're coming in. There is no automatic exclusion. But as soon as they find out who you are and what your background is, they're saying, no, thanks.
Three times over now.
Yeah. And it's quite an inconvenience to sacrifice your time, really, what seems like for nothing.
Why doesn't somebody keep track of this? Why would John be repeatedly called when he's been called once? I would think by the second time that the system would make note of the fact that he is not eligible to serve and not just throw his name back and have it be recycled and have him be called repeatedly.
Well, you're giving the system too much credit, Paul.
Evidently.
There is no information stored about why somebody did not get selected or was taken off.
I think it had a lot to do with I changed addresses. So I got called at one address and I got called at a different address.
That could certainly be the case.
Voter registration, I had to switch my voting location, and that's where I've indicated prior that I would be willing to serve on a jury. It's my understanding that's at least where the database comes from.
Yeah, the database comes from voter registration lists supplemented by driver's license lists.
Yeah.
So you get a wide variety of people that can be called.
Well, I'm glad I was able to add my 2 cents in today.
We are too, John. Thank you for the call. Let's go to Elizabeth in Pittsburgh with a comment. Elizabeth, welcome to the show. You're on with David Harris.
Hello.
Yes. Hi, Elizabeth. Yes. You're on the air.
I've served on 2 juries, one civil in another state and one criminal here in Allegheny County. And I think that they are responsibilities, and I actually think they're great honors to serve on a jury. I've never understood. I do know the first day is very, annoying, but I've never understood people doing everything they can to get out of jury duty. And the final comment I want to make is that in both cases, the judge discussed with us our responsibilities and afterwards thanked us in such ways that I thought I have indeed done something really, really good for my community and something really valuable.
That's a great comment, Elizabeth. You know, in the past, it used to be you got called down there, you got treated so-so at best. Nobody would say anything to you about what was happening and why you were there and whether it was a good thing or not. In the past 10 to 20 years, we've had a real reversal in that. The court systems virtually everywhere recognize that this is a great inconvenience to people. That's why most people don't want to serve in the first place. And they try to do much more to educate people in the jury pool of why they're there, what can be expected. Yes, there's a long wait, but we appreciate it. That's much more common now than it would have been 10 or 20 years ago. So I'm glad your experience was good.
And thank you for the call, Elizabeth. Why is it, David, that juries and jurors don't get more respect?
Well, it's fundamentally a question of convenience, if you ask me. People know that if you get picked for a jury, you may have to be there a long time. You may have to be there several days or even several weeks, taking time out of your life. We don't compensate people for the time that they miss work to the degree that they would be paid for their work. Some jurisdictions don't compensate at all. You have family obligations. You have social obligations. And this can interfere in a big way in a person's life.
But your work cannot prevent you from – your employer must accommodate whatever is required of you. And that part is clear. I think we understand. Elizabeth's comments aside, I think we all understand why it is that people don't like the jury, don't like the process,
yes.
and don't want to be on a jury because they don't want to miss work or family obligations, whatever it has to be. There are, of course, folks who are dying to be on juries.
Yes.
And for some reason, those people don't always get picked, which is, much to the amusement of people who do get picked that don't want to be on the juries. That having been said, though, why don't the jurors get more respect? In other words, you mentioned this whole idea of you show up, you're kept in the dark, there's nobody really explaining. It's gotten better, But there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of respect for the people coming in to do the job of being the jurors.
Well, like I said, Paul, the court system gives them more regard and respect than they used to. But there has also, I think, historically been a feeling that jurors are just very manipulable, that they don't really bring a lot to the, you know, to the process, that they're just responding to who's the best lawyer, the slickest talker, wearing the nicest tie or the nicest dress. And that is really contrary to my experience. When I was trying cases in front of juries, I found them to be intelligent, engaged as they could be given the long process and the many hours and minutes spent sitting. They do a good job. They do their best. They are citizens giving what they can. And I think they ought to get more respect. I'm glad court systems are giving them more respect than they used to. I wish everybody could realize that they're doing an important thing, as Elizabeth said.
Well, our guest is Pitt Law Professor David Harris. And if you're interested in asking him a question or have a comment, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Also, our email address, esspgh@wesa.fm. And on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EP Live, Richard in Millvale could not stay on the line but wanted to comment that he was a resident alien and was still summoned and later dismissed. David, can you comment on that?
I think that may be because he has a driver's license. If a person is in the system for having a driver's license, they may also be called. It does seem to me that that kind of thing can be avoided. If a person is not eligible for jury service, they're supposed to send out a questionnaire ahead of time in most jury systems. I know that's done here in federal court, and I think probably in state court too. And it should include questions that would be disqualifying. You send that in, and you could and should be excused that way. That shouldn't have to result in somebody going down there for a day for nothing.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation on the air. And David, how is it determined whether a case will go before a jury?
Well, this is a choice to be in the criminal side. This is a choice by the defense. And the defense gets to choose whether it will exercise its right to have a jury or not. It depends upon the type of case you have. You may have a case that a jury would be good for in the sense that it is fact dependent and maybe has some emotional resonance. You may also have a case that is really about a strict legal issue. You may be arguing, yeah, this happened, but there's a legal reason why the client should not be convicted. There you might rather go with a judge deciding because the emotions would not then play into it to the same extent. Now, the other thing, and really the giant 800-pound gorilla, is that so many cases don't result in jury trials at all. Any kind of trial, in fact. 97% of our criminal trials, state and federal, result in some kind of other dismissal, sometimes before trial, but most often in guilty pleas. So you have something less than 3% of all charged criminal cases going to jury trials. And I think when people hear that, they're really shocked because we get this idea, especially from television and the movies, that this is quite common. We have lots of jury trials, and we do have some. But in fact, it's the tiny minority that we have going to jury trials.
3%?
Yes. Isn't that surprising?
That's very surprising.
Now, if you think that the jury is a good institution.
3% of criminal cases are actually tried in front of a jury.
Yes. That's right. And it may in certain jurisdictions be less. If you think the jury is a good thing, that it educates the public and involves the public, that's kind of troubling. That so many cases should be resolved without actually a jury determining what the facts were. There's a plea of guilty and so forth, and everybody moves on.
And, of course, one of the – and I want to talk a little bit about some of the aspects of the case in our conversation today, but the Robert Ferrante case.
Yes.
He was, of course, Mr. Ferrante was the Pitt professor who was earlier this month he was on trial before a jury, and eventually there was a first-degree murder conviction handed down to this particular individual, a University of Pittsburgh medical researcher accused of poisoning his wife with cyanide. So that was the case that went before the jury. So the reason it did is because his defense team said, we've got a better chance in front of a quote-unquote jury of his peers?
Well, two levels of decision-making. First, does the prosecution offer him a deal that he wants to accept, some kind of an acceptable plea bargain that would do for him what he needs and that the prosecution gets what they need? When that doesn't work, the sides go to trial. Then they make the decision of whether or not this is a jury-type case or a judge-type case. And I think this was the kind of case, very fact-dependent, in which you are probably better off in front of a jury than a judge.
412-246-2002 to join the conversation with our guest, Pitt Law Professor David Harris, talking about jury duty and the nature of juries, the whole principle behind it and how that has evolved over the years. Let's go to Linda in Point Breeze. Linda, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. You're on with David Harris.
Hi. I am myself a lawyer, although I don't actively practice, and here's my question. I've been called a couple times to jury duty, and I find it very frustrating. They automatically eliminate me because I'm a lawyer, even though I would love to serve.
That's a great question. You know, I've had the very same experience, Linda. I was summoned for jury duty, I guess it's two summers ago, and I was probably the most eager person in that whole room. But when they got me up there and they found out I was a lawyer, I was a law professor, I'd had a lot of experience with police and with witnesses and so forth, at least one side was not eager to see me serve. Now, you should not be excluded automatically. There are no longer any professional category exclusions. But each side has a right to dispose of or get rid of so many jurors. And if they don't feel that you're going to be the right kind of juror for their case, they will simply ask to take you off. That is their right. I don't know that this happens to all lawyers, though, because I've actually had a couple of juries myself in my own cases in which I have had lawyers on the jury. So I don't think it's automatic. I think that people are just reacting to you and saying to themselves, well, I don't want somebody with this kind of insider knowledge on the jury, so I'll just exercise one of my challenges.
Linda, I don't think so,
because I never even get to voir dire.
Were you excluded simply because you are a lawyer or because of the kind of law you practice?
Well, I don't practice actively.
Okay.
But that's what I'm saying. I never even get to voir dire because they see lawyer and they tell me to go home.
Well, that's very unusual. The voir dire process for our listeners is the process of questioning people to see whether each side could accept them as jurors. The fact that you are experiencing this before you even get up to be questioned is very unusual, and frankly, I'd like an explanation for it myself. They're not supposed to exclude somebody based on profession. I can only guess that both sides are seeing something in the information that they are given about all the jurors, which is pretty minuscule, and they are deciding that they do not want you to serve, and they have a consensus on that, so that's why it's done.
Linda, thank you for the phone call. What if – is it having to do in some cases perhaps with a certain specialty? For example, if you are a defense lawyer and someone presumes that you are going to tend to side more with the defendant, would that be part of the idea behind excluding someone who has a law degree or is involved in the law profession?
Absolutely. Not for Linda, of course, because she is not a practicing
right.
lawyer, but perhaps she has a practice background in her past that is getting known by the attorneys. We don't know how they would know that. But if you are if the voir dire process reveals that somebody is a defense lawyer or is a prosecutor or has some particular role in the judicial system or depends on police officers in some kind of way, that would be a reason that one side or the other might want to exclude you from the jury.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Ann in Pittsburgh. Ann, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with David Harris.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share an experience I had when I lived in Florida. This is probably 25 years ago. I got called for jury duty, and because of television, I had a completely wrong picture of what it was like. I thought these trials were going to take forever, and I thought I needed to be excused because I was going on a business trip the next week, and the judge said no. And I ended up being on three different cases. One was an arson, one was kidnapping and armed robbery, and the other one was solicitation and indecent exposure. And although overall the experience was good, I did not like the experience from the standpoint of that I would have to come down on one side or the other. I felt like there wasn't enough information sometimes. And the other comment I wanted to make is I would like your opinion on Jury of the Peers, just because I think that if people actually had a jury of their peers, there would be a lot more acquittals, because I know you explained it as a cross-section and whatnot, but our true peers would be somebody around our same age, our same gender, our same background, you know, possibly same profession, and so on. So yeah, if you could just comment on that. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ann, for the call, and I can understand why Ann might kind of read some things into this idea of your peers, but it seems that the definition is a broad-based one, just that the idea is your fellow citizens.
Yes, your fellow citizens, a cross-section of your community, and not your peers, because we need not only to have fairness to the defendant, we need to have the whole community involved. And that's why we talk in terms of a cross-section. Anne made a couple of other observations that I'd want to pick up on, too. She sat on three trials. Now, I'm amazed by that, because now, and maybe it's changed in Florida, the system here in Allegheny County is like most of the other systems. It's one day, one trial. You get summoned down there. If you're not picked in the first day, you go home, your service is done. If you are picked, you only have to serve on one trial, no matter what its length. This is a system that is a lot more sympathetic, I think, to what people have to go through. And then her comment about, I wasn't sure, there didn't seem to be enough information, very telling. When you don't have enough information as a juror to know what happened, the verdict is not guilty, because they have not proved the case to you beyond a reasonable doubt.
Let's go to Pete in Monroeville. Pete, you're on Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, how's it going?
Good.
Well, the question I had was, I served on a jury approximately 7 months ago. It was for a criminal case, and the whole trial lasted about 5 days, and it was a very contentious deliberation at the end. I was the foreman for the jury. We did end up coming down to a verdict in the case and found the defendant guilty, and what really made me impressed was, after we delivered the verdict, the judge actually had us go directly to her chambers. And after she was done with the proceedings inside, she came into the chambers with the prosecuting attorney, and she answered any questions that we had as a jury. And we were able to ask all those questions that we still had a little bit of, we wanted more information, and for whatever legal reason, we weren't allowed to be told that information. And what it did was, it gave us a really good feeling as a jury, I think, that we came down to the right verdict, because we told all those things that for... because there was a problem with jurisdictions, you know, there's cases that were outside the county that we weren't allowed to know about, information that we weren't allowed to be disclosed. And she was able to answer all those questions. And I think as a jury, we left a lot more satisfied that we had done the right thing with the guilty verdict after she did that. And my question really is that a common procedure? Because I had never heard of that before.
Pete, that is an excellent question. What a great story. And I can tell from your observations how much it meant to you and your fellow jurors that the judge took the time to answer all your questions, and how it left you with a greater feeling of satisfaction. I wish more judges did that. I don't know how common it is, but it is more common now than it was 10 or 20 years ago. Sounds like this was an extraordinary judge going the full way to give you a good experience. So I would encourage lots of courts to do that when they have the time and the inclination. I think it's a great, great idea. The reason that maybe you weren't told everything, this is a common issue. Jurors want to know, why didn't we hear about that, when they learn about it later. The rules of evidence, the rules of criminal procedure, simply exclude things from consideration for reasons of policy. We don't want the jurors to hear about this because we have a rule against it. It would be too inflammatory. Sometimes those things seem right, sometimes not so right, but that's the reason for it.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking about jury duty, the nature and history of juries, what is expected if you're called to jury duty, and why jurors are dismissed with Pitt Law Professor David Harris. If you have a comment or question, and a lot of people have today, 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Email address ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. David Harris, we've made a lot of progress talking about different aspects of juries and where the practice originated from. How are lists of potential jurors generated for selection in Allegheny County?
We're pretty typical, Paul. What we do is we look to voter registration lists first, and then we supplement that with driver's license lists. The idea is if you just look to voter lists, it wouldn't be complete enough. Then you look to driver's license lists to fill that out. Even so, a person who's not registered to vote and doesn't have a license isn't going to be on the list. And you can see that that would exclude a certain, maybe small, but not insignificant number of people. But that's how we start. And that gives us that cross-section that we hope for, and we select from that list.
And how do lawyers pick juries today? What process is followed?
Well, this is so interesting. You know, back in the days of the dinosaurs, when I came out of law school, lawyers would pick juries based on basically demographics, things like gender and age and particularly ethnic and racial group. And they would say, oh, you don't want a juror like such and such, you know, a white man between 35 and 55 because they all think like this. You don't want ladies who are of Polish background who are young because they think – it was all based on stereotypes. Now we are far from that point. And any lawyer who knows what they're doing picks people based on what they already believe. That's why that questioning process is so important. So if I have a case with a certain narrative built into it, I want to pick people who are understanding and sympathetic with that existing with that narrative, with their existing beliefs. So I want to know what they believe, what they think, what their experiences have been, and I want to pick those who match my case most closely because that's the way I'll get the best hearing.
412-246-2002. Let's go to Rich in Shaler. Rich, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with David Harris.
Hi, Paul. Hi, David. David, you touched very earlier in the segment on this issue of jury nullification that occurred during pre-constitutional America colonial times. I think you were suggesting that if people were presented with a case that looked to them as demonstrating that the government was overreaching, that this prosecution was unjust, they would just set aside the standards, the criminal law standards, and say, we're going to set this person free. And as I think you know, that's not really practically possible today. And I'm wondering if you would just explore that a little and talk about why jury nullification has sort of gone out of fashion, particularly because you said that statistic that currently 97% of criminal cases do not go to trial, they end with a plea agreement. Doesn't that statistic suggest that perhaps we are in another era of government overreach, the same sort of government oppression which led colonists to reject criminal prosecutions or criminal convictions several hundred years ago, might be present today in those same sort of circumstances.
All right. Let David jump in.
Well, the statistics certainly suggest that there'd be fewer opportunities to do jury nullification. For those who don't know, jury nullification is when the jury decides, despite the facts and the law, which might seem to lead directly to a guilty verdict, the jury chooses to ignore either the law or the facts or both and find the defendant not guilty. Now, this has a long history in this country. And it's not always a positive history. I did mention the case of John Peter Zenger in colonial times. That was seen as a great triumph for freedom and against British oppression. But in the post-Civil War era, the Jim Crow era in the United States, particularly in the American South, blacks were really not on juries, sometimes legally, sometimes de facto. And you would get juries who simply would not convict in the case of a white person killing a black person, no matter what the facts and the law were. That's jury nullification too. Right now, there's some argument about whether there ought to be more jury nullification, particularly in drug cases where we can see that the drug prohibition system has failed. It seems to be targeting certain groups of people, particularly racial groups. There are people standing up to say there ought to be jury nullification in those kinds of cases, people like my colleague at Georgetown University, Paul Butler. So it has a long history, sometimes good, sometimes not so good.
And we have an impression of what the jury experience is like from dramatizations, and we've heard
yes.
a few people call in and say television or movies gave me this impression, and then I got to sit on a jury and it was nothing like that. We get our impressions from things like 12 Angry Men.
Yes, classic film.
Yes, and how often do you suppose things play out the way they are depicted in that film, where one holdout, as you know, portrayed in the movies by Henry Fonda, one person holding out on a verdict can end up swaying or changing the minds of 10 or 11 other people?
Well, it can certainly happen, but it's impossible actually to know because we don't get information from inside the jury room.
But one person can hold up the whole verdict.
Absolutely. And if that should happen, you needed a unanimous verdict in criminal cases from a jury. And one holdout would mean you had a hung jury, and that would be a mistrial. The case could start all over again if the state chooses to prosecute it.
So a hung jury?
Yes. A hung jury means that the jury could not agree on one or more of the accounts – of the counts charged. And those counts are dismissed for now, but the state can re-bring them and recharge them and retry them. So it's a mistrial on the hung counts, and it's up to the state to decide whether to go for another trial.
So it has to be unanimous. Everybody has to be in agreement for the verdict to be rendered.
Yeah, that's the rule in almost every place I can think of that uses juries. You have to have a unanimous verdict for a criminal guilty finding.
And at what point did the issue of outside influences become a concern? We talked about how far back this concept goes to colonial times. Of course, shocking though it may be, there was no television or electronic media back in the late 1700s.
Hard to believe, yes.
Right. So, I mean, you did have the Gutenberg press had been invented, and you did have newspapers being distributed. But was that a concern back then?
Well,
did that concern evolve?
Yes, in the era of mass media, certainly in the 20th century, even in the 19th, when you had mass distribution of newspapers, judges have been saying for decades and decades to jurors when they go home at night, do not read the newspaper about this, don't pay any attention to any news reporting, and don't discuss it with anybody
in
your family.
Which really seems odd because you're on the honor system, and how many people – I mean – let's face it, human nature being what it is, how many people are going to adhere to that?
We hope most of them do, and I think most of them do most of the time. But this problem has gotten much, much worse now in the era of electronic communication and particularly social media. If you look in the Allegheny County rules for jurors, jurors are told, yes, you can bring your iPad and your computer and your smartphone down to the selection room. But once you're in court, and certainly once you're in the jury room, those things are not allowed. And we've had a number of cases across the country in which jurors go onto Twitter, they go onto Facebook, they make a post about the trial, they can read news about the trial. And that's just
– That's a problem,
that's
isn't
a,
it?
Big, big problem, and courts are grappling with that right now. These influences are so pervasive and so common in our everyday lives that people oftentimes don't give any thought to say, well, hey, I'm serving on a jury and this is happening. And people get taken off of juries when that happens.
Let's take one last call from Bill in Freedom. Bill, you're on Essential Pittsburgh. Good to hear from somebody in Freedom.
Hello?
Yes. Hi, Bill.
Hi. This concerns the lady attorney who couldn't understand why she was dismissed. One of my philosophy professors explained to me that when you are at a professional job, you basically have, your education takes you to more opportunities of critical thinking. Your guest stated that the attorneys are trying to get people that can be swayed to their particular opinion. The more you have been educated with thoughts of critical thinking, the more difficult it is for an attorney to sway you. So once you put down that you have a certain education level, generally you're set out. That's not against people that don't have that education. I don't mean any insult at that level, but the attorneys know who they can influence, and someone who has that higher education, has more education, and has been through all that And that's where a lot of the problem lies.
But what Bill is saying seems to make a lot of sense, David.
It does. And I think there's something to that. It really does depend, though, on the type of the case. Because if, depending on what you are having to do as a lawyer, if you are having to move jurors against what looks like a lot of evidence based on your argument, there's a lot of evidence against the defendant, you have to move jurors in your direction, you want somebody who can think independently and out of the box a little bit and won't be just stampeded into something. So as a general matter, I certainly agree that for a lot of people, they're going to look for folks they can persuade, if not manipulate. But in some instances, the greater education will be a plus.
For the one attorney, but not for the other.
Certainly. That's always the case. They have different theories of the case, different positions they're representing. They want different kinds of jurors.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bill. And one last comment I wanted to get to from an anonymous person who said that they apparently called in to say that they missed jury duty and they're wondering what's going to happen. So I'm assuming what they're saying is that they got the summons in the mail, they blew it off. Now what?
This is a good question. I've never been through this personally, but I think if you called the jury office – and told them that you did not serve, but you'd like to get back on the list.
I feel badly about this.
I think they could probably accommodate you. But I would do that
soon.
Now. I would not wait.
Don't wait for them to come after you.
That's right.
Pitt Law Professor David Harris talking about juries. David, thank you. It's been
my
a pleasure,
Paul. It's been great.
Coming up, business contributor Rebecca Harris on the growth of entrepreneurship. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.